This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Trap for the Potentate by Mikhail Atamanov, translated by Andrew Schmidt, narrated by Eric Michael Summerer. New Director. "Did you call?" I asked, knocking politely and walking through the wide-open doors of my new boss's office. Before entering, I pumped the brakes for a second, reading a copper plaque that a workman was screwing into the door. Max Toner, Director of Special Projects. He was the fourth person to occupy this office in a month. Truly, it was a cursed position. The new head of the Special Projects Division didn't look all that glum about it, though, reflecting confidence, gravitas, and power with his whole appearance. When I entered, he gave a scant nod and motioned to the guest chair. It should be said that my recent late-night conversation with the Keeper had given me an utterly mistaken picture of my new boss. Based on the voice and behavior of his glowing winged character, I supposed that the person playing the Keeper was fairly young, maybe even my peer. But the man sitting in the immense director's seat left by the rotund Mark Tobias was short, around 50, and had a noticeable gray streak in his otherwise dark chestnut hair. He had a huge bald patch that practically reached the back of his head, and I was also struck by his eyes. They were chalky, cold, and had a very light-colored iris. They looked somehow inhuman, like those of a snake or fish.
"You already know my name," Max Toner said with a nod to the plaque, "and I know yours. So then, let's get straight to business. Timothy, what kind of character do you play?"
"A goblin herbalist?" I answered, surprised at his ignorance. How could he not have known that? After all, he had met me in Boundless Realm, seen my big-eared Amra with his own eyes, and probably read the race, profession, and level as well. Had he seriously forgotten? But as it turned out, it wasn't forgetfulness or ignorance that served as the reason for his question.
"So then, you're an herbalist, not a pirate, or a wolf rider, or a beastmaster. But meanwhile, herbalism is your most waning and neglected skill. You still haven't even leveled it to first specialization, even though your character is at level 40. That's a downright mess. The corporation hired you to do a specific job, show our users all the advantages of playing as a goblin herbalist, but somehow you just keep doing all manner of things other than your explicit profession."
With every new phrase, my boss raised his voice more and more. By the end of his incriminating speech, he had built up to a scream. I tried to vindicate myself, reminding the director with a smile about the great hunt for my Amra and how I had to constantly flee, so I didn't have much time to gather plants. But I should have just kept my mouth shut. My boss found my response inappropriately jocular, which struck him as very disagreeable. He also clearly disliked having a subordinate try to contradict him. A stream of reproaches and cursing poured out onto me. I was accused of not respecting my superiors, having a defiant attitude, exhibiting boorish behavior, holding a negligent outlook on work, and damn near treason against the Boundless Realm Corporation. Only at the very end of his hateful monologue did Max Toner begin to calm down, noting justly in a more or less normal tone,
"Timothy, the great hunt for you ended several days ago. But you have missed a number of work shifts since then, and your goblin didn't gain a single level in herbalism over the whole 10 hours of your last gaming session. Your character didn't grow in any other way, either. You just flew to your heart's content over the desert at night and lollygagged instead of working."
I really had no way of denying his last accusation. After leveling up the Royal Forest Wyvern to the point it could support my small weight, I really had forgotten about everything on Earth and just enjoyed the sensation of flight, while my orcish army made its way across the great desert. But there were plenty of other complaints without the senselessly wasted gaming session. I was in shock and didn't even know how to behave. No one had called me out like this in a fairly long time. I suppose the last time I'd gotten such a chewing out was 10 years ago from my school principal for missing my final algebra exam without a good reason. At that time, I was poorly prepared for an important test, so I thought I'd be clever and skip it, claiming I had sharp chest pains. I was only 10 at the time, and I naively supposed I would simply be allowed to go home, then take the test a day or two later, getting the questions from my classmates and finding the answers to them in the comfort of my own house. However, it all turned out wrong. My awkward attempt at faking illness was quickly uncovered by the ambulance workers, and instead of maximum points on the test, I got a call to an enraged school principal. But then, 10 years ago, I could have guessed that the school director wouldn't have anything good to say, and was morally prepared for his stream of sharp, enraged proclamations. Now, though, the new special projects director for the Boundless Realm Corporation had caught me off guard with his fervid criticism. I didn't know how to act. I could either demonstrate submission and agree with him, or, on the other hand, tell the boorish man what I thought about treating subordinates that way, and sign my resignation right then and there. In the end, life did exist beyond the Boundless Realm Corporation. I'd find myself another job with leadership that treated me right. Also, the 500,000 credits I'd earned in the Great Hunt allowed me to have an optimistic outlook on the future, and not worry too much about losing this job. But I still didn't rush such an irreversible decision. My boss had already said his fill, blown off steam, and was returning to normal. Some of the things he said were completely correct. What was more, I noticed that he looked tired, as if he hadn't gotten enough sleep. His excessive irritation was probably rooted in that. What was more, Max Toner had most likely gotten an emotional send-up from his bosses, intended to push him into adapting quicker to his new position, and he was just transmitting this rage to his underlings. Nevertheless, I was expecting a totally different evaluation of my gameplay. No matter how you sliced it, Amra had kept the wonderful flying mount, acquired a unique mythical hound for the Grey Pack, made it away from the big chase, and kept up an exciting pace the whole time. The fact that my video clips enjoyed such success in the rankings was evidence of that. Taking advantage of the pause in the stream of the director's rage, I reminded him of my accomplishments. And yet, on that account, my boss had a totally different perspective. "Timothy, I don't see anything to your credit in this sudden spike in popularity. You got the unique forest wyvern from nothing more than one stroke of luck. I don't know all the details of what happened, but I've heard rumors that your much-vaunted quest was not entirely free of foul play, and that other directors of special projects were fired over some of the murky details. From there, you just rode the current. The reason your clips were so popular wasn't because you're such a brilliant player, but simply because the players were interested in the valuable trophy of the Great Hunt. Soon, your fleeting glory will pass, and all that will remain is a barren remnant, an abominable goblin herbalist who hasn't even developed his main skills." I wanted to disagree, and even opened my mouth slightly, preparing to speak, but just kept silent and lowered my head. Actually, I had to agree with him there. Max Toner then continued, "If you were just a normal player, no one would have said a word to you about your poor skill leveling. But you're employed by the Boundless Realm Corporation, and everyone knows it. You must serve as an example for the others, show the advantages of playing as an herbalist, reveal the potential of that path, and then, at the very least, don't lag behind in your profession. But what we have on our hands now is a rotten mess. The average level 40 herbalist has their herbalism skill at around level 42 or 3, but yours is just 15. I'm not afraid to say that someone who works for a game developer should be ashamed of that. How much time do you need to correct the error? Will 1 week be enough?" "More than," I answered with an even and absolutely confident voice, trying not to show my feelings. Inside, I was cringing in horror. Was it really possible to raise my herbalism skill by 30 levels in 1 week? Even if I crawled around the forest and swamp day and night collecting herbs and flowers, it wasn't certain I'd make it. But I didn't want to show my lack of confidence in front of my boss. I was still a senior tester, a quite famous player, and wanted my boss to see me as an experienced employee who knew his value.
"That's great, then," Max Toner lit up. "Then let's come back to this issue in a week. And for now, Timothy, I say we should look over how to use your unique flying snake for the shared interest and benefit of the whole Boundless Realm Corporation. There are very few flying mounts, and your advantage over other players needs to be constantly emphasized.
How about exploring some undiscovered lands? It cost me great effort to hold back an acrid comment. It was hardly possible to both actively gather herbs for the whole next week and take Vixen on prolonged flights. But I didn't provoke my boss, instead answering that I was already working on something like that. A wyvern is, of course, good, but it alone isn't enough for long scouting missions. The flying snake is still small and weak. She gets tired quickly and has to land often. In any place inhabited by dangerous monsters, we'd be devoured the second Vixen lands. And also, don't forget about flying beasts. Boundless Realm is full of them. In far-off unknown places, such monsters will be beyond high level. Vixen and I won't even be a mouthful to them. But as it turns out, I currently have about 300 brutish orcs under my command. Of course, I could just let the NPC pirates go free, but I don't think that's the right decision. No matter what, they are a valuable resource which just needs to find the proper application. Maybe I could use them for a big expedition to hard-to-reach undiscovered lands.
Continue, the director replied. His interest piqued. He folded his hands together and leaned over the table toward me.
My troop is moving through the narrowest part of the Great Desert, and today or tomorrow we will have reached the other side. I told my warriors the way, then spent all night flying back and forth on the wyvern, bringing them strength-restoring water from an enchanted spring near a copper mine. The water is a special elixir that restores endurance, but it spoils quite fast, so I had to carry it on the Royal Forest Wyvern to get it there in time. At any rate, my cutthroats are moving fast, and will soon cross the desert and reach a deep, wide, black river on the very edge of the known world. I could make a map of these new territories, and even, if I'm dreaming big, construct a defensive outpost on the river, where players can wait out the dangerous nights in safety. The director turned on his computer screen and spent a few minutes checking something, scrolling through text on his monitor. Then he sat back in his leather armchair and looked at me with a smirk.
Timothy, you have no idea what you're talking about. That black river you're leading your orcs to is called the Styx. It's also known as the River of Death, because it contains water that is dead and completely unfit to drink. What's more, the river has overgrown swampy banks with infectious blood-sucking animals, and that's an easy way to catch an untreatable disease. The biggest draw of those areas is the abundance of high-level dangerous creatures. What's more, further upstream, the monsters get deadlier and have bigger, sharper fangs.
There is a constant law in game worlds. The further you get from easily reachable places, the harder the conditions, the more dangerous the beasts, but also the more valuable the loot, I noted in an even tone, although this new information put me on high alert.
That is true, the director agreed. And the upper reaches of the Styx hide a great many interesting locations with unique trophies, but taking them is extremely difficult. I found some curious information, saying that 26 big expeditions have already been organized, and by quite serious clans at that. And as for how many lone travelers or small groups have tried to find the upper reaches of the Styx, I can't even count. None of them have made it. They all turned back sooner or later. Now you want to tell me that you hope to make it where much higher level and better prepared players got clobbered? I didn't give an unambiguous answer to the director. I just promised to think as seriously as possible before this evening, then tell him my decision in this very office at 8 p.m. On the one hand, I was, of course, not glad to hear that the river I had seen from Vixen's back was the legendary and ghastly Styx. On the other, I had a flying wyvern at my disposal, which made it significantly easier to reach remote locations. My boss, then, was left none too satisfied with my cautiousness and began to openly goad me into agreeing. Timothy, if you can complete this mission, I'll take back all my insults about your worthless goblin herbalist. What's more, in that this mission is directed at exploring Boundless Realm and will be useful to all players, I will try to get the leadership to give you a valuable reward, appropriate to the difficulty level.
But I just repeated my promise to seriously think about it, said goodbye, and left the office. Despite the obvious difficulty of the mission, I was in no rush to refuse. The perspective of Amra's video clips falling in popularity after the end of the Great Hunt gave me an unexpected shock. You get used to popularity and glory quite fast. They're like a drug. and after having millions of people waiting with bated breath for your video clips each day, suddenly becoming an unknown loser would be unbearably painful. I was prepared to participate in this resounding and dangerous adventure if it could help restore viewer interest in the adventures of my big-eared goblin. But such important decisions needed to be discussed in advance with my little sister. No matter how I looked at it, we played as a team, and I would never drag Val to such gloomy and unwelcoming places without her agreement. Just after waking up, I rushed to my computer to see how many viewers had watched my new clip about the orc's journey through the Great Desert and my riding the wyvern. 2,104 people. Not so very long ago, that number would have made me jump up to the ceiling in joy, but after getting millions of views, it looked pitiful and didn't make me happy at all. No matter what you say, my boss was right today. My goblin herbalist's glory was fleeting. With that sad thought in mind, I went out into the hall and stopped short. Kira was sleeping on the sofa, covered with a light blanket. Her glamorous red hair was spread out on the pillows, and she was squeezing a huge plush rabbit. Precisely when my girlfriend had come into the apartment, I did not know, because I had been sleeping like a rock for half a day, making up for my active night. But now, I didn't even know how to behave. Probably, for a start, I should at least get dressed so I wouldn't be wandering around the apartment in nothing but my underwear. Trying not to be too loud, I tiptoed back into the bedroom. But my girlfriend woke up, nevertheless.
"What time is it?"
Kira mumbled drowsily, not peeling back an eyelid. 7 p.m.?" She responded with a dismayed bleating.
"Damn, 7 already? Time to get up. But my head is just humming. Timothy, do I have to go to work today?"
I smiled at the strange question and answered with a happy chuckle that I personally had nothing against giving my girl a day off, but as it happened, Kira was my boss somewhere high up in the corporate hierarchy, and maybe even the president of the Boundless Realm Corporation, so technically, it would be subversive for me to tell her what to do. Kira opened her eyes and threw the comforter aside, revealing that she was wearing nothing but a semi-transparent nightie. She sat up on the edge of the sofa and said,
"You're funny, Timothy. How long have you been working as a tester for the company? A month? Are you seriously saying that in all that time, you never bothered to find out who is in charge of the Boundless Realm Corporation?"
I grew embarrassed, lowered my gaze, and shrugged my shoulders. Yes, I was just a senior tester, and my job was to play a flap-eared goblin herbalist in Boundless Realm. All these appointments and changes of directors, stock payouts to beneficiaries, and other lofty topics were not quite in my sphere. Kira shook her head in reproach and, looking me shamelessly right in the eyes, brought me up to speed.
"The president of our corporation is named Thomas Haywood. He's a tall, stately, dark-haired man with singular charisma, excellent education, and a surprisingly broad perspective. I feel like he knows everything on earth. And on every floor of the company skyscraper there are portraits and quotes from his speeches. How could you not have noticed? Anyway, as it turns out, I personally know Thomas very well. Once upon a time, my grandmother, Inessa, did her best to marry me off to him. Thomas and I even dated for a while, but we had a mutual breakup after not too long. I was of no interest to him as a woman. He needed a tool to influence the board of directors, and a convenient stepping stool to reach the heights of power. All that said, we remain good friends and periodically cross paths at private company parties and various get-togethers for city elites."
I don't think Kira was purposely trying to make me feel low, but in the end, that is exactly what she did. The beautiful redhead had never before allowed herself to point out the bottomless pit that separated our social standing. All around, it was a very painful slap to the face, although it was honest. Yes, my girlfriend was an elite and, although she didn't advertise it on every corner, a financial bigwig of the metropolis. The chic lady only allowed me to be near her out of a fleeting whim, tired of rich admirers from her circle and people searching for unusual distractions. No, I didn't say anything to Kira and didn't show that her words had hurt me in any way. But it was precisely at that moment that I decided once and for all. I needed to find the upper reaches of the Styx. even if my sister refused to accompany me. I headed to the kitchen and put some coffee on for me and Kira, reached for the mugs, but my phone rang, stopping me. The ringtone was unusual, and also the number was unknown. Strange. Nevertheless, I accepted. Hello?
Hi, Amra. When will you be back in Boundless Realm? I've started to miss you and am horribly tired after this never-ending day. This red-hot desert has simply finished us all off. Even the orcs with the highest endurance are staggering. No matter where I look, there are nothing but scorching hot dunes.
Taisha? What the hell? I shook my head and even gave myself a hard pinch to make sure I wasn't dreaming or losing my mind. I had just gotten a call in the real world from an NPC from a game. This was just not possible. Probably it was just a friend playing a trick on me. I asked the suspicious voice a few questions to check, knowing that only my NPC bride could have the answers. And she did. All my doubts passed. This was definitely Taisha, a computer character from a virtual game.
How did you find out my number? And how did you manage to call the world of the undying?
The green-skinned beauty cracked up laughing, clearly satisfied at the effect she'd produced.
Emra, you're the one who showed me how to do it. You even said your number in front of me when you called the ambulance. Did you forget?
No, such things could not be forgotten. I remembered the ghastliest moment in my life perfectly. My frightened big-eared goblin was holding his unconscious forest nymph sister in despair as Valeria died in the real world. I had called right from the game and told my address to the emergency phone operator, also giving my telephone number. But the last thing on my mind at that moment was that my NPC bride might memorize that information and use it to call me in the real world. But I had to answer Taisha somehow. I tried to reassure and perk up the NPC thief by promising to come into the game as soon as the sun set, when my goblin vampire would no longer be threatened by its glaring rays. I also asked Taisha to pass along an order to First Mate Ziabash Hardy to keep up the march. They needed to make it through the Great Desert, no matter how hard it was to travel over the red-hot sands. Taisha promised to transmit the order and hung up. I lowered my hand with the phone.
Timothy, who was the girl that just called you? And what language were you speaking?
Kira asked in agitation, standing in the kitchen door, having found the energy to get off the couch and come figure out who I was speaking to.
What do you mean, what language?
I answered with a smile, and sharply froze. She was right. I was not speaking my usual native language, but what even was that? Goblin tongue? I couldn't find any other explanation, and answered just that to the owner of the apartment. I also told her the call was from an NPC thief by the name of Taisha, a computer character from the game Boundless Realm.
Are you mocking me? Do you think I'm the kind of naive fool who would buy such a tall tale? Tell me the truth right now, or I'll be very angry at you,
Kira shouted, boiling over. But I stayed firm, repeating again and again that I had said the whole truth. I had really just been called by a computer character asking when I would come into the game. My red-headed girlfriend started hissing like an enraged cat, and said through tightly clenched teeth,
I, of course, will give you a chance and check your story with corporate specialists, even though it sounds like obvious crap. But if it all turns out to be a lie, and you make me look like a fool in front of serious people, I...
Kira didn't finish her sentence, just turned sharply and went into the other room, slamming the door loudly as a grand finale. I still didn't know what exactly the red-headed fury was planning to do if the NPC thief's call had not been detected by any corporate workers. Would she break up with me? Kick me out of the apartment? Complain about me to her influential grandmother? And if it wasn't any of those things, I could be sure that would lead to something nasty. When I came back into the room a few minutes later with two mugs of aromatic, freshly brewed coffee in hand, Kira had already left the apartment. When I got to the hospital, Val wasn't in her room. Her wheelchair wasn't there either. Had she just popped out for a minute and would be right back? But a nurse walking down the hallway told me she had seen my sister on a lower floor talking with the other kids. My eyebrows shot up in surprise, My shy and unsociable Valeria had taken it on herself to go on a walk and talk with peers? Until I saw it with my own eyes, I'd never believe it. But the nurse was not wrong. Even from the stairs, I could hear happy, childish laughter and cries of joy, Val's voice included. I stopped sharply. For a girl who had tried to kill herself just a few days earlier because the real world is unbearably gray and boring, positive emotions were as vital as oxygen. So it certainly would not be a good idea to pull my sister out of the common room away from her active playtime and burden her with my problems. So I didn't interrupt the children's game and returned to my sister's hospital bed. Time was pressing, and I needed to go to work very soon, so I just left a bag of fruits and a gift for Val on the bed, leaving a short note on the table. I talked with a new director. I'm supposed to raise my herbalism. When you have the time, look up how I could raise it by 30 levels in a week. I'll see you in the game at 9 tonight. This morning, I had promised the new director I'd give him my final decision about the expedition to the Upper Styx at precisely 8 tonight. It was already near 8, and I was really afraid of being late to a meeting I'd set myself. That would be extremely irresponsible and a sign of disrespect to my superior. So, in a lather, I flew up the building steps, ran to the elevator, and at 7:55 was standing at the door with the plaque reading Max Toner, Director of Special Projects. But the door was locked. Had the director not waited for me? Then my phone gave a beep. It was my friend Max Sachnier, the Naiad traitor.
Hello, Timothy. Have you already talked with the new director?
I could sense a certain subtext in that seemingly normal question, so before answering, I asked my friend why he wanted to know.
Well, I just left his office 10 minutes ago, and now I'm just awash with despair. If he hadn't been called to some kind of emergency meeting, I'm afraid he would have bit my head off. Leon is sitting next to me at the table. He's all pale. His arms are shaking, and he's smoking inside.
I could hear the former builder's shaken-up voice.
Yeah, they really got me worked up. If I get fired for smoking, then to hell with this job. It took me a lot not to break that old bastard's jaw with an uppercut.
I admitted that this morning I had about the same feelings when talking with Max Toner. I was not used to having someone shout at me so flagrantly, and I didn't know whether or not to be glad about the fact that I was standing in front of the locked door of his office, and the second half of that difficult conversation would be put off.
Yep, I get that, Max Sochnier smiled. Anyway, come down here to the tester floor. Leon and I are sitting in a nook by the vending machines waiting for you. There's a lot to discuss.
Precisely 3 minutes later, I left the elevator on the tester floor and headed over to my friends. Both Leon and Max Sochnier stood up when they saw me, and we greeted each other warmly.
Guys, the new director is a wild animal, said the former music teacher, raising the relevant topic. He shouted at me and threatened damn near prison time just because I withdrew money from my character's game account. I really did convert 30,000 in-game coins into 3,000 credits. I was planning to trade in my old electromobile for a more modern model.
Was there something criminal in that? I asked. I mean, you're an employee, and if your contract allows it, you absolutely have the right to withdraw money.
That's what I thought, Max Sochnier flared up. But apparently, it wasn't so simple. The finance department complained to the director about me. Apparently, since my character is holding lots of loans and client money, our boss had to figure out the situation and calm the financiers down. Instead of that, he started shouting at me, saying that a person in my position withdrawing money from Boundless Realm could be accused of embezzlement, which breaks corporate rules and tax law in general. It's totally surreal. I cannot get my own salary without the agreement of an auditor appointed specially by the corporation who will check the legality of every withdrawal. I'm a traitor, and I will always have some money that technically is an advance from someone. Why should that mean I sit here without a salary?
Yeah, that's total nonsense, I agreed. And what if you change your contract to a fixed salary? Max Sochnier gave a glum chuckle and said that was exactly what the new director had tried to force him into today. But in that case, his salary would be 4 times lower. After that, Leon told the story of his talk with the new boss. He tried to use only appropriate words, but my straightforward friend didn't always manage. The director was unhappy with absolutely everything. The ogre fortifier's low level, the lack of a sensible game plan, the sharp drop-off in progress, and even his romantic relationship with a tester employee. It was all used to make the former construction worker feel guilty. I also shared my experience with our new boss, after which my friends got totally sad and hung their heads. Seeing their gloomy state, I steeled my nerves and told them my plan. We would go together to a place where nary a foot had fallen, and not just human, but of any player of any race, the upper reaches of the Styx.
"And how will that help us?" Leon asked sullenly.
"Popularity, unique trophies, and not only that," I chuckled. "The department head will be forced to treat us with respect if we announce for all to hear that we are corporate employees carrying out a special, extremely risky mission for the good of all Boundless Realm. We could even name our boss and say he was officially instructed by the corporation to give us this mission." Max Sochnier and Leon exchanged glances and both snickered, imagining our boss's face after getting that kind of news.
"He'll definitely come at us for that," the cautious Frenchman noted.
"He won't. First off, he was egging me on to take this adventurous journey, so it's the pure truth. Second, I'll try really hard to get a bunch of players watching our campaign. I've got a couple trump cards up my sleeve. We could even stop doing the short daily video clips and switch to live streams without any cutting, showing all the problems, dangers, and deaths. But the most important thing for us is to present the situation in such a way that all viewers will associate us not with the private initiative of a small group of players, but with a project organized by the Boundless Realm Corporation. We need to make it so that our success or failure will be seen as the company's success or failure." My friends went silent in thought. Finally, Max Sochnier stopped drumming his fingers nervously on the table and spoke up.
"That's all well and good, Timothy, and I'm prepared to accompany you on this adventure. But I'm not really getting how you plan to drum up all that interest in your video clips. After all, there are thousands and thousands of streamers in Boundless Realm, and only some of them manage to become popular."
I gave a sad chuckle and, with a heavy sigh, admitted to my colleagues, "Well, I have one very important difference from other streamers. My character is infected with vampirism. He was made that way from the very beginning of the game, and all that time, my goblin vampire has been forced to play only at night and regularly drink blood. I think now is the very time to tell that secret to the whole world. We can even present that fact as yet another whim of the developers." My friends stayed silent for a long time, shocked at my admission. Finally, Leon squeezed out,
"A lot of your goblin herbalist's behavior is clear now. Both how you play at night and how you take blood samples for anti-venoms."
"I bet people really will watch your streams," Max Sochnier continued in deep thought. "Just think, one of the very last vampires in the game. What matters now is for our group not to be set upon by a huge group of paladins, fighters of the undead, and various other vampire hunters."
My friend's fears were very well founded. I had already thought them through, though. "That is precisely why we'll announce the vampirism only once our crew is a bit further from inhabited areas. If someone wants to bag a vampire, let them follow us into the gloomy and dangerous lands around the River of Death. I imagine there won't be many impatient enough for that, if any such busybodies are even to be found. Most players will watch our journey and wait for us to return, hoping to catch my goblin herbalist after the dangerous trip."
"But sooner or later our campaign will end," Leon noted justly. "And what will you do when your vampire comes back, and hordes of players are waiting for you with wooden stakes, silver crosses, and wreaths of dried garlic?"
I shrugged my shoulders indefinitely. Why worry now about what might happen in the very distant future, and may not even happen at all? What was more, there was an important nuance. It wasn't enough for the players to merely know about the goblin herbalist's vampirism from my video clips. In the game, that knowledge wouldn't help their characters one bit. In order for the quest to trigger, they'd need to uncover the vampire in the game itself, and I was certainly not planning to help with that. Furthermore, my level 20 veil skill allowed me to hide my name, and my sister could use her illusions to disguise my big-eared goblin in any number of ways. and then try to find the vampire in the crowd if he looks totally different and has a different name. Also, no matter what, I always had the option of flying away on Vixen and losing them again. In general, I didn't consider myself doomed, and was even sure I'd be able to squirm out of it. My friends and I spent another hour sitting at that table, arguing and vividly discussing the concrete details of our forthcoming campaign. Above all else, in order to solve the problem of supplies and provisions and, at the same time, help Max Sochnier avoid chicanery from the Financial Control Service, we agreed to buy supplies for 300 orc pirates with all the money the Frenchman had borrowed from me. We agreed on the array of purchases and delivery location carefully and in great detail. Beyond that, I asked my friends to look for any old maps left after the 26 unsuccessful expeditions to the Upper Styx. I was certain these maps wouldn't be publicly available. I'd already checked, but maybe we could find a player willing to sell. What was more, we also needed more companions, preferably NPCs, who could serve as guides and scouts in wild and dangerous locales. Neither we nor my goblins and pirates had the requisite experience and knowledge to survive in the harsh, swampy climes. But such characters could probably be found in the game. So I asked Max Sochnier to find and hire them in the ports and cities his tipsy albatross passed through on its trade route. We discussed further plans as well, but then my alarm rang out at 9 and I came to my senses. It was time for me to go into Boundless Realm. Lost Oasis. So then, loading. There weren't any new messages, which served as yet another confirmation of the fact that my goblin herbalist's popularity had fallen among both players and viewers. During the Great Hunt, I was reminded, I had grown tired of digging through the huge mountain of constant incoming messages. Well, I'd hope this was all just a temporary phenomenon. A table displaying my character's stats jumped before my eyes. Name, Amra. Race, Goblin Vampire. Class, Herbalist. Experience, 513,172 of 540,000. Character level, 40. Hit points, 336 per 336. Endurance points, 293 per 293. Statistics. Strength, S, 42, 42. Agility, A, 49, 150. Intelligence, I, 5, 21. Constitution, C, 44, 55.5. Perception, P, 3, 45.3. Charisma, CH, 78, 96. Unused points, 0. Primary skills, 6 of 6 chosen. Herbalism, P, A, 15. Trading, CH, I, 18. Alchemy, I, A, 23. Dodging, A, P, 22. Stealth, A, C, 23. Exotic weapons, A, P, 13. Secondary skills, 6 of 6 chosen. Veil, 13. Acrobatics, 18. Athletics, 16. Foreman, 26. Riding, 18. Animal control, 14. No matter how you spun it, my herbalism really was limping with both legs. My other skills needed attention too. But this was business as usual with a character that earned experience primarily for completing quests, and not by slogging through hours worth of farming. At any rate, I'd think up something to correct the situation. So then, the world finally loaded. It was late evening. The sun was already beyond the horizon. Lots of stars were scattered in the sky. Orcish tents were densely packed all around me, and behind them, I could hear a dismayed crowing from many throats and bickering in elevated tones. I was standing next to a small fire pit, where a group of orcs was boiling a pot of something that didn't smell too appetizing. My arrival was met with a storm of adulation.
Captain! Captain Amara is back! He can solve this for us!
I could already tell by the increasing volume of the shouting behind the tents that my immediate intervention was needed. I pushed the pirates aside and hurried to the din of the fight. I had come just in time. There were already sabers and knives drawn. As far as I could tell, one of the groups of rioting pirates was led by the shaman. The other side was a horde twice as big as the first, commanded by my first mate.
"What is going on here?" I shouted.
My rage-filled cry stopped the knife fight, and both sides of the conflict hurriedly sheathed their weapons. Fortunately, I made it in time. Only the troll had been hurt, but the huge green creature had perfect regeneration and pulled a curved blade from his chest, which had gone into the very hilt. In silence, he returned the weapon to its owner. First Mate Ziabash Hardy took a step forward and set out the essence of the conflict.
"Captain Amra, I got an order to continue our path through the desert, but my guys are dead tired and have already been walking for days on red-hot sand without a break. More and more often, they ask me where they're even going. The sea, after all, is in the complete opposite direction, and before us is only sand and death. Still, I drive them forward as I was ordered, but the crew is reacting less and less to my angry shouting. It's practically reached the point of open rebellion."
"We nearly died today under this unbearably scorching sun,"
rang out the dismayed voice of an orc. However, the speaker preferred not to say that to my face and hid behind the others.
"Anyway,"
sensing the attitude of the crew, the first mate continued his speech, now much more confidently.
"Our last day in the desert was a total shitshow. Our water reserves were gone by midday, and the sun just kept burning mercilessly. Any of us would have killed for a gulp of water. Only by evening did we find this tiny oasis hidden amongst the dunes."
The troll, whose wounds had already fully healed, continued the orc's speech.
"Here we have water and shelter from the sun, but as for food, it's totally barren. A couple palm nuts for 300 hungry mouths is basically nothing. And meanwhile, none of us have had a bite to eat in 2 days. A dozen volunteers led by Shaman Gu headed out toward those cliffs to the south on a hunt, but they didn't even get 1,000 steps from camp before an Efreet attacked."
Now an Efreet. We already had enough problems. I understood my crew's dismay perfectly, but I also didn't know what I should do in this situation to reassure the pirates and restore order.
"Efreet?"
Valeriana Quickfoot had now also loaded up Boundless Realm and reached the dust-up, jumping right into the conversation.
"Are you sure it was an Efreet?"
"Yes, Madam Enchantress,"
said the shaman Gugel All-Knowing, stepping out in front.
"It was a sandstorm Efreet, level 77. A huge, semi-transparent spirit, looking like it was made all of sand and flashing lightning. We didn't even manage to draw our weapons before the demons spun up a bunch of dust storms around our squad. Lashing, howling, wind and sand blasted us right in the eyes. We couldn't see at all, or orient ourselves. And after that, as if in a ghoulish nightmare, the sand under our feet opened up, and 3 orcs fell in up to their belt. They were crying out in such pain it was as if they were being skinned alive. And with every moment, they were pulled deeper and deeper."
"It was horrible, Captain,"
confirmed the very orc who had stabbed the troll in the chest with his saber a minute earlier.
"The shouts of those 3 unfortunate souls is still ringing in my ears. We turned to stone in fear and couldn't move. We just stood and watched as our comrades died. A few moments later, they were pulled completely under the sand and the screaming stopped. After that, it was as if our invisible fetters fell off and we could move again. We ran away in panic. And I beat a retreat with the rest, Captain. My magic was powerless against such a ghastly demon,"
the shaman told me, lowering his head.
"As soon as we got back to camp, I summoned some spirits for advice, and they told me the further we went in the desert, the worse it would get. There would be more and more Efreets like that one, and the demons would get stronger. The spirits advised us to turn around quick before it's too late. They told me the only thing we could expect from going forward is death."
The pirates started talking in raised tones. There were some who thought we should return to the copper mine as the shaman suggested. Now here was some grief. I hadn't even considered the fact that my pirate crew might not want to make the dangerous journey to the upper reaches of the Styx. What should I do now? Fortunately, my sister came in with a very timely comment about the Efreet, although it was from a slightly strange perspective.
"Well, I can't believe what a stroke of luck this is.
Ifrits are considered great sources of loot by the undying. They live for hundreds and thousands of years and collect lots of treasure. Somewhere near where it attacked you, there should be a lair with all his riches. Normally, Ifrits live in caves with very well-concealed entrances, using magic among other things. But Captain Amra is good at finding hidden places, and I can draw back the magical curtain. I think we should return to the site of the attack and look carefully for the entrance to the treasure cave.
I immediately sensed the mood of the horde changing. Just a minute ago, the sandstorm Ifrit had caused the orc pirates to feel nothing but tense horror and a desire to get as far away as possible. But now, my brutes were hesitating. Their fear of the ghastly demon was struggling with the temptation of its riches. And while the scales were tipping, I needed to support my sister's idea. I took a step forward, calling for silence with a gesture and announcing loudly so all the pirates would hear me.
It really is rare luck on our part to find such a creature. Whichever of you was first to see the Ifrit will get a reward of 50 coins from me personally. If he is alive, of course,
I said with a happy chuckle, and many of the orc pirates laughed.
Foreman's skill increased to level 27. Ifrits are dangerous only because they catch you by surprise, but a well-prepared team can take down such a creature without particular problems.
The Mavka assured everyone just in time, and the last doubts of the pirate crew passed without a trace. Now everyone saw the ghastly monster as nothing but a valuable prize.
We really were lucky to find the Ifrit. We'll have to clear the desert spirit's cave, so our suffering through the great desert won't have been in vain. But only the strongest and bravest will come with me for the treasure. I can't have my warriors scampering away as soon as the wind picks up.
I'll go,
my NPC wife Taisha called out without even waiting for the end of my sentence. She was decked out in a full suit of green dragonhide armor and looked very impressive and resolute. I gave a nod of approval, and the goblin beauty burst forward with a joyful cry, hanging off my neck. Then Shaman Gu walked forward, squeezing his gnarled staff and muttering something about wanting to dig through the demon's treasure. After that, gathering a team of volunteers was very simple. There were more than enough takers.
I really hope you weren't wrong and we can take down the monster, I whispered into the Mavka's ear when we'd gone away from the pirates and could talk one-on-one. Otherwise, I'm afraid my authority as the successful captain of a pirate crew will nosedive and never recover.
I hope so, too, Valeriana Quickfoot answered me just as quietly. Anyway, Dumbo, you should get over to those faraway palms. I see a respawn circle there. The best part about Ifrits is that the weakest defense they have is to physical damage,
the forest nymph informed me, already having studied the article on them in the Boundless Realm bestiary.
Ifrits are magical creatures. They are very hard to kill with magic. They actually have complete immunity to air magic, but at that, they are very vulnerable to normal arrows and simple physical weapons. Also, they are not exactly famed for their brain power. It's generally recommended to send one or two tanks with good armor and high HP against an Ifrit, then have others shoot it from a distance. A pretty dumb strategy, but it works.
Are you saying a desert demon doesn't even have enough smarts to dodge an arrow?
I asked, somehow doubtful.
Tim, can you really expect intelligence from simple desert winds? Beyond its huge size and ability to summon whirlwinds, an Ifrit is just an idiotic stream of burning air and sand, brought to life by demonic magic, and it will stubbornly attack whatever enemies are found nearby. So if we use our troll, pack him in some decent armor, and let him take the hits...
I imagined the plan and rejected it.
No, Val. A level 77 monster will quickly shake our level 54 troll down, regardless of his armor and regeneration. And even healing magic from our shaman won't help. The level difference is too great. So I say we use Taisha and I as lures, darting around before the Ifrit's very nose.
Meanwhile, 20 orc bowmen will shoot it full of arrows, as Taisha and I dodge the gusts of wind and shifting sands. The shaman will support us, increasing our strength and agility.
And you can create copies of us with your illusion magic.
That'll really throw the Ifrit off his game. We can even take the Great Pack and our goblins, Irik and Yuna, with us. They cannot die, and extra experience won't do them any harm. The plan was extremely simple, and I had no doubt it would work. Here, the main thing was provoking the Ifrit, to force him to expose himself and crawl out of his hiding spot.
Then, from there, we could handle him quickly. In theory, it was all simple, but reality had a surprise in store. No matter what we did, the Ifrit just didn't want to show itself. We spent a whole hour in groups and alone wandering around the darkened desert, but the malicious sand demon was in no mood to come out. I walked the area up and down, activating my search for life and night vision skills, but didn't discover a thing.
"Maybe you were wrong after all, and this isn't the right place?"
the Mavka asked the shaman for the umpteenth time. But Gugel All-Knowing continued assuring her that he was not mistaken, and this was the very place where the Ifrit had attacked the orc hunters. The shaman's words were also confirmed by a trail of huge orc tracks I found leading from the oasis and back, which cut off abruptly. The dust devils the Ifrit had conjured must have wiped away all traces, leaving nothing but unmarked desert sand.
"Maybe the sand demon ate his fill with those three orcs and is resting now as he digests his prey. Or maybe he gathered strength and changed location,"
Valeriana Quickfoot suggested, but Taisha, standing not far away and looking at something, shook her head.
"No, the Ifrit definitely isn't full. He died."
"What?" My big-eared goblin was instantly next to the NPC thief. Taisha pointed at a small, colorful rock half-covered with sand.
"Sandstorm Ifrit Heart, alchemy ingredient. Insufficient intelligence to determine characteristics. Successful perception check. Experience received, 160 experience."
The stone seemed wet. Strange. Water in the sands of the great desert? Perhaps it was just dew, of course. But how could there be dew at the very beginning of the night? And after such an unbearably hot day at that. I picked up the strange stone. It was fairly heavy, quite wet, and somehow sticky. It didn't seem to be water. I looked a bit closer.
It wasn't water at all. Ifrit blood, alchemy ingredient.
A very rare thing, given how extremely difficult it was to come across an Ifrit. For my vampiric collection, it was invaluable. Only Taisha and Valeriana were nearby at that moment, so I had nothing to hide. Not wasting time, I stuck the stone in my mouth and sucked all the moisture off it.
Achievement unlocked. Taste tester. 42 per 1,000.
The message was, though pleasant, entirely predictable, so I wasn't surprised. But the next events showed me how little I knew about Boundless Realm. The stone suddenly gave a pulse in my mouth, as if the Ifrit heart was still alive, and my goblin swallowed it in surprise. I choked and fell down on a knee, because the stone was fairly large. It took a good bit of effort to pass. Still, I managed to work the stone down my gullet. The next message I saw made my goblin perk up his ears in surprise.
Fame increased. Present value, 5. You are the first player to use an Ifrit heart in this way. You have activated a magical item. You may choose one effect. One-time experience gain of 500,000 experience. Permanent plus 5% defense against air magic. One item in your inventory will be stripped of level and skill requirements.
Holy crap! 500,000 experience points could instantly level up my goblin herbalist to 51. 11 levels in one go. Although, I imagined my director saying, "Your character is at level 51, but herbalism is still at 15, and my enthusiasm crashed. So, defense against air magic, or...
I also had Fenrir's Claw, which I could not use at all due to level requirements.
That was right. I opened my inventory. There it was. Fenrir's Claw Amulet. Unique item. Gives plus 250 constitution, plus 250 strength, plus 50% resistance to physical damage, plus 50 to reaction of the following creatures: dogs, wolves, wargs, volkodlaks.
Attention, your character's level is too low to use this object. Requisite level, 125.
A great candidate for removing level requirement. I chose to use the Ifrit heart for that. Nothing happened for 5 seconds, and the information on Fenrir's claw didn't change. I even got worried it hadn't worked. Although, I could now place the amulet in the proper equipment slot, which I immediately did. And just then,
The game system started spewing a whole bedsheet of text. You have equipped 2 items from Fenrir's Cursed Regalia. Hidden mission completed. True Alpha of the Grey Pack. Experience received, 40,000 experience. Grey Pack member limit increased to 10. Set bonus unlocked. All Grey Pack members will receive a bonus of plus 50 strength, plus 50 agility, plus 50 constitution, plus 25% movement speed, plus 25% experience gain. Level 41. Level 42. Animal control skill increased to level 15. Mission received. Fenrir's Legacy. 1 of 4. Mission class. Unique. Personal. Description. Collect and equip the 4 remaining items of Fenrir's Cursed Regalia. Reward for each item. 100,000 experience. Plus 10 animal control. Plus 50 strength. Plus 50 agility. Plus 50 constitution. Plus 2 to Grey Pack member limit. Optional condition. Equip all items of Fenrir's Cursed Regalia. Reward, 1 million experience. Fame, plus 3. Grey Pack member limit removed, making number depend only on charisma and skills. Attention. If optional condition is completed, your character will receive the criminal tag, visible to all players and active until your character unequips all items from Fenrir's Cursed Regalia. Your character's death will not remove the criminal tag. It took me some time to carefully read and digest all that information. The game had offered me a unique quest, which was a very rare occurrence all on its own. What was more, I had just been revealed a path that would allow my goblin to achieve truly limitless power. No more Grey Pack member limit. That would mean... My breathing ceased from the number of possibilities. Just raise charisma, level animal control, and at the same time probably foreman, and I could add many hundreds of fearsome predators to my pack. And at that, I could give each of them the pack hunter specialization, making the strength, survivability, and combat abilities of each fanged beast grow proportionally to the total number. Plus, the pets would also be strengthened by my skills. Then the bonuses from Fenrir's Cursed Regalia. Yes, a permanent criminal tag was extremely unpleasant, giving anyone the right to kill my big-eared goblin herbalist. But my vampiric character was already preparing to become a wanted criminal, so that didn't really change much. All that remained was one tiny issue. I had to find the 4 items. And before I could do that, I needed to find out their names and what kind of items they were. After all, I didn't even have a near appreciation as to what I needed to look for. Boots? Or maybe a helmet and cloak? My only clue was that the name of the object would most likely reference the huge, mythical wolf Fenrir. I took a heavy sigh, returning from the heavens to unhallowed ground. I didn't have enough information. Finding unique items based on what I knew, given there was only 1 copy of each in the huge, boundless realm, would be very, very difficult. Although, I had a flash of inspiration. Perhaps they were still in the hands of players who had killed Fenrir a few months earlier. Determining the participants of that notorious event wouldn't be all that hard. After all, there were a ton of video clips and associated topics on the game forum. There was probably a detailed chronicle of the final battle practically down to the second. Although, the players that got those trophies may have sold them long ago, or given them to someone, not seeing any value in the cursed items. I suspected that these items hadn't been made a set until quite recently. After all, the Ring of Fenrir had been made by the game admins just 3 weeks ago. The players had seen just a heap of odd items in the loot left behind by Fenrir and his army of wolves, and a lot of it was fairly useless, and also cursed, making it nearly impossible to remove. Just then, I was visited by another mystery. After all, even if I was able to find the 3rd item from the cursed regalia, I wouldn't even be able to put it on. The amulet said I had to be at least level 125. Probably the other items also had very high requirements. Overall, I needed to think about this. I called the forest nymph and told her in detail about my unexpected discovery. My sister immediately dug out the most important bits.
Tim, you should cruise the Boundless Realm Forum tonight to find the other items from Fenrir's Cursed Regalia.
That whole story with the fall of the Grey Pack didn't end all that long ago, and I'm sure there are some traces left. But it should all be done as delicately as possible, so none of the forum lurkers notice the suspicious interest.